Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Usually Dr. Tim Sharp, the conductor and artistic director of the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus, prepares concerts featuring choral music, both sacred and secular, by the classical masters, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, and others. This week, though, he'll be leading the Oratorio Chamber Chorus in a mass that he wrote. Drawing on his East Tennessee roots, from the opening strains, you'll know that this is a very different kind of sacred music.
Kyrie eleison.
To Lord, oh, to remember me.
Christe eleison.
That's the opening of Sharp's High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass that draws on bluegrass music, the Appalachian and Southern hymnody that is a part of that tradition, combined with the Latin Mass and its English translation. He'll be leading a performance of the piece in a Tulsa institution that is sacred for an entirely different reason, the Canes Ballroom. The event gets underway tomorrow night with a dinner and Gospel Squares exhibition at 6:45, and the Mass takes place at 7:30. Dr. Tim Sharp is in his fourth season with the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. He's also the head of the American Choral Directors Association. He's also a prolific writer with books on choral technique and early American music, including the music traditions that are featured in his mass. Come Away to the Skies, a High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass, takes place tomorrow night at the Canes Ballroom. And Tim Sharp is my guest today. Tim Sharp, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. Great to be here.
Now, this Thursday, you're going to be... Really, it's a sort of a premiere of sorts. You've been workshopping this piece for about a year. Tell us how this High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass, how did you get this idea of doing a mass with bluegrass music?
Well, I grew up as a kind of a folk player myself. I grew up in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia. So the instruments of banjo and mandolin and guitar were kind of child instruments for me. And then the classical education took over, and I went on to school and learned these forms and went on to work in choral music. And it's always been a dream of mine to kind of hybrid the forms of choral with a style that really doesn't have a choral style. I mean, you've got wonderful vocals on your bluegrass songs that we all like, but to have a whole choir underneath it. So that had grown on me, and one day I was sitting in Episcopal Church where I attend in Oklahoma City, and we were singing the hymn Come Away to the Skies. And I thought, wow, does that sound like a name of something? Sounds like a bluegrass song. So I started thumbing through the Episcopal hymnal and found other Southern harmony tunes, and that just led to sort of the corpus that became the High Lonesome Mass.
And this piece is an amalgam of the Latin Mass,
right?
The Latin Mass translated to a rough English version of the Latin Mass, and the Southern hymn songs.
Exactly. It's got a logic to it and a kind of a classical thread that runs through it, because you think of the Latin Mass, the first movement that we know in the Latin Mass is Kyrie eleison. Well, I grew up in the South, and I could always remember people saying, Lord, have mercy, Lord, have mercy. Well, that's what Kyrie eleison means, is Lord, have mercy. And so I started playing with those ideas, the Gloria in Excelsis, for example. That's just the song of the angels. And there are plenty of early American and folk tunes that recount that story. So each movement became a where can I find a sort of a folk brother or sister to this idea from the Latin Mass? The Agnus Dei, the Lamb of God. Well, What Wondrous Love Is This is from the Sacred Harmony, and it's To God and to the Lamb I Will Sing. So these marriages took place over about a year, and I found really nice things to couple what the text says in Latin to what an American folk hymn would say in the Southern.
Now, is there any original text, or are you basically using the Southern hymn songs combined with translations or the literal Latin?
That's it exactly. It's the literal mass or translated literally, like the Credo is translated exactly into English from the Latin Credo, but I've put, of course, a bluegrass underlaying to it. And the Credo is just a Rip Snorton bluegrass-style piece. But the hardest thing to write is to take the whole Credo, all those words, and actually turn that into a metric bluegrass song.
Well, you know, it's funny. Even great composers will take the Credo and basically, you know, here's a chord, and we'll say a few words.
Exactly. And
because yeah. it's in a lot of masses, it's the most chant-like, going back to, you know, Gregorian chant, because of just the sheer amount of words. You're basically putting, you know, the Nicene Creed to music.
Yeah, and then trying to metricize that so that it keeps in a four-beat pattern is another challenge, too. But that was the wonderful parameter that I kept working on. And there's another little technique I use in it that we call macaronic, where you go back and forth between Latin and English. Some of our carols do that, in which we sing a little bit of Latin, and then we go into an English translation. I've done that in a couple of movements, too, in a way just to translate it for the audience rather than them to have to work at what are they saying right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you first came up with this idea and you started talking about putting it together and talking about it, what was the reaction? You know, you're big in choral circles.
Right.
And people could say, oh, that's really interesting, or why would you want to do that? I think what it's interesting to me is, you know, you grew up with this music, and a lot of times when you go to classical music, all of a sudden that becomes the music, and everything else that you listen to as a kid was like, oh, well, that's... But obviously this has a very special place in your heart.
It does. You know, I think because I have such great respect for some of the bluegrass singers, Del McCoury, Ricky Skaggs, Alison Krauss, Emmylou Lou Harris, these are fine musicians. And they go back to a very soulful beginning that I relate to. And I feel the same way. If you get to the root of this music, it's very passionate music. And I don't like the idea of these words getting so non-passionate and away from us, because I think they are very passionate, because that comes from a reality for me. It was really easier for me to put that on it, because it's not a caricature. It's the real deal. I mean, when we sing the Agnus Dei, it's a poignant, even though it's ballad style, it's still very heartfelt. Now, it starts light. The first movement is the Kyrie is a little lighter, but it gets a little more serious as you go through. And I think the biggest concern I have or had was that people might think it was a caricature or some kind of a treating lightly what is very, you know, sacred or very important to people, and that there is no lightness to the overall treatment. And I think if anyone comes to Keynes, those that do, will see that it does lead you down that path. But still, putting a very likable musical form, bluegrass, underneath it. So the toes will continue to tap even, you know, while the seriousness is going on.
And what I would say about real bluegrass music, a lot of it is sacred music. I mean, in its own, you know, the sacred songs and things like that that were part of the Hill Country, there's nothing frivolous about that either. You think of all the songs that Doc Watson saved that came down from generation and generation.
Yeah.
These were songs that were sung at church, with no instruments at all, were sung at homes for their own particular sacred encounters in their home.
Yeah,
this was serious music.
It was serious, and I think the same,
but fun.
The same tradition that informed those primitive Baptist churches, even though they would be the last to admit it, came from the exact same, tradition that we inherited from Western European sources. I mean, Earl Scruggs would tell you that he grew up listening to these ideas in his Virginia Primitive Baptist Church. Of course, they weren't saying Kyrie eleison, but they were saying Lord have mercy, and they were saying, kind of these Appalachian Sacred Harp and Southern Harmony versions of those same ideas.
And of course, most of that music came over across from England.
Absolutely.
From the Church of England as well as the Catholic Church.
It came from, you know, one of my favorite stories is that story of William of Orange, the Irish Unionists that were singing these songs about, they didn't call him William, they called him Billy. And they came to the Appalachian Hills singing these Billy songs, and eventually these guys were called those Billy Boys of the Hills, which came to be called Hillbillies. But, you know, I mean, if you just take that etymology back, you're talking about William of Orange. So it's the Hillbillies would never have thought, oh, we're related to stories about William of Orange, but that's how close those ideas were related.
My guest today is Dr. Tim Sharp, the artistic director of the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. He'll be featuring his High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass, Come Away to the Skies, Thursday, November 1st at 7:30 at the Canes Ballroom. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. He worked about a year on this piece, right?
Yeah.
And I guess you've been workshopping it over. So you've been changing things along. Have you found things that have worked and haven't worked over that year?
We did. My writing partner is Wes Ramsey. Wes lives in Nashville, Tennessee. And we've been writing things together ever since I lived in Nashville back in the 90s. And we started on the West Coast. We premiered it out in workshop in Seattle and Portland. And there's a great bluegrass tradition out there, too. And then we worked on it and refined it. We did it a couple of denominational musician events last summer. And we found that we needed to have an introit, so we added a new beginning piece so that people's ears could sort of get accustomed to this. And I also discovered along the way that bluegrass players, and I should have known this, are in a way kind of aggressive players. They step out and they play, the fiddle player, the mandolin, the banjo. So in the opening Kyrie, we wrote this little breakout section so that each instrumentalist would have a chance just to hot dog it for a second in the middle of this choral piece. So letting them exercise their bluegrass rights at that moment. So,
well, I think one of the best pieces that shows off this amalgam is the Gloria. And what is the song you're using, the Southern tradition song?
The tune is called Holy Manna. A lot of people in their hymnals sing it to a Brethren We Have Met to Worship, but the actual tune name is Holy Manna.
All right. Well, let's hear a little of this. Now, this is, I guess you've put together the CD from some Nashville session players, did the instrumental tracks, and then a choir in Oklahoma City sang.
Exactly. It, right? We recorded the instrumental tracks in Nashville, and this is Ricky Skaggs' tour band that's actually playing the instrumental parts underneath it. And the choral parts on this particular recording was a workshop down in Oklahoma City, the Southern Nazarene University Chorale.
All right. Well, let's hear a little bit of the Gloria from Come Away to the Skies, a High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass by my guest today, Dr. Tim Sharp.
Gloria in excelsis Deo, and on earth peace, goodwill, et cetera, pax hominibus, bona voluntatis gloria.
That's music from the Gloria section of the High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass. My guest today is Dr. Tim Sharp, Artistic Director of Tulsa Oratorio Course and composer of this piece. And we get a sense of this amalgam of music that, you know, you hear the Latin, you hear the translation, and you hear these songs behind them. And I guess you've done quite a bit of research on these Southern Revival songs. These are, you know, they're still sung a lot of times in Protestant churches with different words. Sometimes the words are changed a lot,
right?
But at the heart, these melodies have been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah, these are folk melodies, and they come from sort of a modal and a scale model that came over from Ireland and England and Wales, and they made their way into Virginia, East Tennessee, into Kentucky, and they really in the 1800s. They found their way into the Great Awakening, revival camp meetings, and they're great theologically. They're great tunes, and you know, tunes like "Amazing Grace" that seem to be universal. It comes from that same sort of genre of tunes, 1810s, 1820s era. They're haunting melodies, usually a little bit modal, often in the minor key. That we find "What Wondrous Love Is This," "Brightest and Best of the Stars of the Morning." One of the fun ones that I've got in here is actually a white spiritual. People don't think of spirituals as being divided into black spirituals and white spirituals, but there actually was a whole group of white spirituals. And one of the white spirituals that I've incorporated in this is a "Do Lord, oh do remember me," which opens the Kyrie.
Right, right. And Are there much differences in the sound of, say, a black spiritual and a white spiritual?
Yeah, there are. The white spirituals are more aligned these sort of sometimes minor key modal pieces. And the biggest difference is that the white spirituals tended to be what we call wilderness songs. I sought my Lord in the wilderness, down in the valley. I went down to the river to pray, which was featured in the O Brother, Where Art Thou? These wilderness songs, and they're really referring to a wilderness being a period of spiritual searching. And literally, the wilderness was where these camp meetings were happening. So that body is wilderness songs. When you get to the black spirituals,
it's about Exodus.
It's exactly right. And that's the same human condition. They're looking for
freedom.
A freedom and a place beyond this place. The white spirituals moving into the place, into the wilderness, the black spirituals moving away from this place to a better place.
Well, a very interesting piece, and I think you're right. You do take this arc, as you know, it starts out a little on the lighter side with the Kyrie, which then you're used to hearing a Kyrie because, I mean, it is Lord have mercy.
Right, right.
And the glory is very glorious, and then as we get into the Credo and the Sanctus, it goes to a more, I guess I think, a deeper spot, I would say. Now, you're dealing with a choir that is used to singing Brahms and Vaughan Williams and Rossini. They're going to be singing this. And also just how you put together a bluegrass piece of music as a composed piece, because so much of bluegrass is improvised and it's passed down. Just like the songs orally.
That's right. It's so true. And this was the biggest struggle I think I've had through the workshopping of this piece. I got to the point where I realized that this piece, for those performing it, they could not be in folders. They couldn't be in music. So I just came to the point with my rehearsal with my chamber choir and says, guys, put the folders down, put it away. We've got to memorize this. You cannot be looking at this score anymore. So the challenge was, and indeed, this is how we're performing it at Keynes. It's memorized and in a way staged. It's almost theater is what we're going to be doing. Because, again, if you think of O Brother, Where Art Thou, we are actually moving in between each movement and kind of taking a position as if we were in church singing. And we're not doing our usual oratorio look. In fact, we were even costuming ourselves a little bit just so that we can remind ourselves of a different era here. But that was the challenge, was to make a shift in styles. But, you know, good musicians can make those shifts, and they can move from pop forms to classical forms. And I think it just stretches us.
It's a different type of singing, though.
Yeah. It is.
I mean,
it's more forward.
The words are coming out right of the front of the mouth.
Exactly. It's not. We tend to, with our oratorial singing, we tend to drop the jaw a bit more, round the vowels more. With this, it's a little bit more relational, a little bit more conversational, even, and it's got a clarity to it. I think audiences are used to hearing that in something like a Broadway musical. It can still be very classically strong vocally, but not the same tone, and we've worked at that.
I imagine you had to. Yeah, right. I mean that you know, choir gets used to sounding a particular way when it's a certain group of individuals.
And this, of course, is a chamber group from the larger group.
Right.
So I'm not sure that we could pull off a piece like this with the larger group.
And it probably wouldn't sound exactly the same.
No, because it is
probably intimate. I mean,
it is. Yeah, there's some moments in this that are very poignant and intimate. But there are some moments that are congregational in which I could almost turn to people and say, hey, sing along this part with us. So, but there are moments where we get very, very quiet and very poignant. Not that the big group couldn't do that, but I think those that come to hear it will see that this gets to be, it invites you in a different way.
Now, you mentioned you said you had to have the choir memorize it. How does the choir sound different when it's memorized as opposed to actually having, you know, the music in front of them? Is there a difference? Can you hear a difference as the director?
There is a confidence when memory is there, when it's solidly there. And there's an immediacy to the conductor, and there's an immediacy. You know, it would be the ideal for any choir to say, we want to do this memorized. I think any musician of any type would say, if I could do it from memory, it would be better. But as we know, I mean, thousands of notes and things spinning by, and the amount of repertoire that we do in a year, not even the most professional of choirs can pull that off. So that's.
But I think you make an interesting point about that, because these hymn songs are so ingrained, you know, when you hear them sung by a choir that's grown up with them,
right.
They're so ingrained.
Right.
It's no music. It's coming straight from the heart, right out. And I think that's probably something you're shooting for, isn't it?
It is. It's the immediacy. I mean, you would not want any barrier between this music. And, you know, this audience will be very close to us at Cane's. This is not going to be that distance with the orchestra between. And the band is behind us. So we're right there at the edge, at the apron of the stage. And so I think it's a different choral experience. And you asked earlier about my kind of inspiration. I really wanted to, in this day and age, bring a hybrid idea into choral music because, you know, we do a lot of very important traditional things, but I also want to introduce something that maybe turns the ear a little bit here.
My guest today, Dr. Tim Sharp, Artistic Director of Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. He's going to have his chamber chorus doing his piece, Come Away to the Skies, a High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass. A performance takes place Thursday, November 1st at 7:30 at the Cane's Ballroom. Now, that's an interesting choice of venues. Why the Cane's Ballroom?
Well, I'm a fairly newcomer to Tulsa. I've been here 4 years now, and I've, as you know, the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus enjoys singing at some of the finest venues around town, Performing Arts Center and some of the fine churches and other places. So I'm always on the lookout for venues, and I had asked one of my members, what's this about this Cane's Ballroom? And they took me there, and I just fell in love with the whole tradition of this, the fact that those saints are the pictures of Roy Rogers, and I thought this is the perfect place to do this kind of folk
mass. Now, it's not often you do a mass in a place that sells beer in the back.
Well, there's that. You know? So I hope folks come with a very broad mind when they come in. So if anything, they could just think of it as a baptism for the room or something like that.
You're doing it all Saints Day, too. And you know, they always say, you know, Gaines has got a few ghosts hanging around.
Well, I'm hoping they're going to sing with us because it's total respect to this folk tradition that I think Oklahoma shares with my Tennessee roots.
All right. Now, one thing I mentioned but we didn't actually talk about is the idea, you know, you're writing this piece as a composed piece, but bluegrass is so much improvisation.
Right.
Talk about what you put out for your musicians that have to interpret this music and what's left to the improvisatory nature of bluegrass.
Well, the challenge on this piece, bluegrass can be pretty much straightforward 2-2 or 4-4. There's a turnaround at the end of the verse, which might throw in one extra measure there. For my piece here, there are some moments of irregularity to it. There are some extended sections, certainly when you get into the Gloria. That is a long text. The traditional Gloria goes on for a while. So when I move into those sections, the bluegrass players are having to read from an actual written chart. That means that we really do have to rehearse and we have to get used to those changes, and the players have to get used to a choral group with them, because that's not a norm either. You usually have a soloist and maybe two
couple background singers
well. But here we've got, you know, 22 singers, and that calls for a different approach from the band. So that has meant rehearsal, and that's been a delightful process for me, because I, both on the choral side that I know really, really well, working with singers to deal with this form, and then me as a banjo player stepping in with a bluegrass band that usually just, you know, does a big old breakdown and goes for it. I've had to temper them a little bit too. So it's hybrid in that sense.
Mm-hmm. And even how to write the music down, I would think, would be an interesting thing, because a lot of times it's just play the 5 chord, one
That's
chord,
right.
You know, do 5-1, whatever.
That's right.
And in this case, are you writing actual licks? Are you writing some, you know, or is it more of a guideline, an example?
The band has what we call a master rhythm chart. And that has the entire, every measure is marked there. So they're counting, and every measure is accounted for. But if they have a particular riff or line that they break out with, say a fiddle has an opening introduction, or a mandolin has a fill, we've written out suggested fills that are, you might say, cliches for those instruments. I mean, there's a certain kind of a role that a banjo you expect to have. There's sort of an open a fifth opening for a fiddle that you expect for any square dance to begin with. Well, I've written those things in there because people, ear-wise, I think, kind of want to hear, well, if it's bluegrass, where's that sound? So we've suggested those, but if the player has better fills than we have, we say go for it. You know? The only thing we don't want them to do is stepping on each other or stepping on the singer. So I've orchestrated who gets that fill and when. And that's, you know, the rehearsal takes care of that.
Yeah. Now, you did write out a bass part because they're doubling.
That's right.
Yeah.
The bass it probably reads more than anyone because it's doubling the bass in the choir, and I don't want any accidents there.
All right. Well, the High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass takes place Thursday, November 1st at 7:30 at the Canes. My guest today is Dr. Tim Sharp, the artistic director. It's also oratorial chorus. And I have to, in our last couple of minutes, you've written a book about the music of Nashville before it was country.
Right, right.
And I guess they had a lot of the music we've been talking about was the music of Nashville. It was spiritual music. It was that Southern Appalachian, you know, choral tradition and hymnody.
Exactly. It's the Irish and the English immigrants that come through that Cumberland Gap area over in the Kentucky and the eastern Tennessee side. They come in and they settle Tennessee. The convergence of what happens there is the convergence of the Second Great Awakening, the revivalism that takes place, the birth of denominations like Cumberland Presbyterians, Southern Baptist, a lot of denominations birthed during that time. And then the real miracle, the Tennessee story, is in publishing rising at the same level. Nashville was one of the biggest publishers in the United States during that time. In fact, the United Methodist Publishing House was one of the oldest publishers, and they're still located there in Nashville, but that was pre-Civil War. So it was the convergence of that style, those hymnals coming out, and that kind of music coming into vogue right at that time that made that whole, what we would say is country music and gospel music, it was all birthed in that incubator of those convergences.
It sounds like what you're saying is that publishing mentality, because you had those publishers there, you had this gospel tradition. When all of a sudden country music begins, it starts there. Plus, you have the great radio station WSM that's shooting a clear channel signal of the Grand Ole Opry, and the publishing is already there. So that's how Nashville was created.
That's absolutely it. If you just peel it back, it's publishing and broadcasting, and they were just filling their pages and their airwaves with what was there at the roots, and this happened to be what was there at the roots. And these instruments, banjo, mandolin, I mean, these are amalgam of those traditions coming in from the mines of Italy. Would be the mandolin from Italy. You've got the guitar from Spain. You've got the fiddle from Ireland. You know, put those together in coming into that area, and you've got basically the band of a bluegrass, or leave out the banjo, you've got a country band. And that was what was around when they were flipping those switches and printing those pages. So it's no wonder, that Nashville became the heart of this. That's the miracle of it. In eastern Tennessee, you find bluegrass, and way over in western Tennessee, you find more of the soulful blues outbreak. But it's all that stripe of immigration that's coming through there and publishing at the same time.
All right. Well, we hope a lot of people come out to the Canes this Thursday.
Thanks.
For this High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass. Tim, thanks very much for joining
thanks,
us.
Thanks, Rich. Always a pleasure.
Dr. Tim Sharp is the conductor and artistic director of the Tulsa Oratorio Chorus. The Chamber Chorus will be premiering his new work, A High Lonesome Bluegrass Mass, Come Away to the Skies, takes place Thursday, tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Canes Ballroom. The doors open at 6:45. For more information, visit TulsaChorus.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.